The Metsu Community Candidate Forum was recorded at the Wasilla Public Library on Thursday, September 28th, by Mike Malevsky of Radio Free Palmer. Sponsored by the Alaska Center, Mark Masteller was the moderator. Five candidates appeared, three candidates for the Borough Assembly and two for the Palmer City Council. Enjoy the recording.
And thank you all for showing up tonight, and thank you guys for showing up tonight. This is really great. Couple of things I want to get across before we start, for the candidates mainly. So every question is going to be the 90-second answer, okay? So there's not some that are lightning round or anything like that. For every one of you, you got 90 seconds, and I'm sure everybody here has done enough to know that 90 seconds really isn't that long, right? So a guy like me sometimes has to be the one to cut you off or whatever. However, we have some help. Megan is going to hold up a thing that says 90, and then she's going to give you a warning of 30. And when we get down to zero, I'm going to be interrupting and trying to get you to wrap it up, okay? But we don't have to be, I mean, we want to be concise, but we don't have to be rude, okay? I'll try not to be rude. Any other rules, Amy, before I, okay.
That's it.
Good. Yep. And then if anybody needs a can of soda, cookie that's back there, we can write questions, and there's also some questions already. So I'm going to sit down. Well, actually, first, what I'm going to do is introduce everybody. Tricia, you're up first. Pat is running for Matsu Borough Assembly District 4. She's a 30-year Valley resident, currently living in Wasilla with a background in public health and 47 years of nursing. She is a reformed kennel manager and raised her sons here in the beautiful Matsu. What kind of kennel?
Slow dogs.
There you go.
They know what fish
is. I just wanted to make sure we weren't talking chihuahuas or something.
Okay. Those are snacks.
Snacks for the sled dogs. Ted Leonard on the far end there. Ted is running for Matsu Borough District Assembly District 4. Ted has an extensive background in both public and private finance and economic development, having served in positions in school districts, municipalities at the state level, and in the private sector. Ted has had unique experience of promoting economic development to create jobs and wealth, and at the same time, the expertise to manage and control costs. Ted's priorities will be to grow our economy, finance needed infrastructure, support our public safety, and ensure a quality education for our children. So that's Ted on the end there. Dan Mayfield, hold up your hand, Dan. He's got a sign right in front of him. Dan is running for Matsu Borough Assembly District 5. Dan has a long history of volunteer work on trails and recreation and was one of the founders of Big Lake Trails Incorporated. He brings over 33 years in the property and casualty industry with extensive catastrophe response leadership experience throughout the U.S. He's a proud father, grandfather, and proponent of safe outdoor recreation. Thanks, Dan. Sabrina Combs, right here. Sabrina's running for citywide seat at the Palmer City Council. Sabrina was born and raised in Palmer. Along with her work at MEA for the last decade, she is a longtime volunteer in her community, serving on boards for the United Way of Matsu, Matsu Miners, Greater Palmer Chamber of Commerce Events, Academy Charter Advisory Board, and more. Sabrina lives in downtown Palmer with her husband Dave and their two young sons. Last but not least for sure, Kenny Pasenik. And
yes.
Do it by Lindy?
Nice job. Yeah, Pasenik's my maiden name.
Okay, sorry, it was on my list. So.
No, that's, you get points. For
okay, and do you go by Lyndon, or I want to make sure people know what name's on the ballot.
Yeah, so it is Kenny, Lyndon, and then Pasenik in quotes.
Okay. Kenny is running for citywide seat on Palmer City Council also. Kenny is a writer and community organizer and currently serves on the boards of Alaska Family Services and Radio Free Palmer, Big Cabbage Radio. She was born and raised in Palmer, graduated from Palmer High with an IB diploma, and earned a BA in Interdisciplinary Studies from Naropa University. Kenny and her husband, Niall, can be found walking, running, and riding bikes around town with her son, Finlow. Thank you all again, and let's get started. So, when I ask the first question, Amy,
yes.
Are we just going to go down the line, or?
Well,
yet. We'll just go down the line, whichever direction you want to start, or you can see that mark.
Okay. So the first question, I'm going to sit down now, folks. This question comes from the Matsu Borough Fish and Wildlife Commission. And I know Andy is on that commission. Are you still on that commission? So the Fish and Wildlife Commission is a group that, you know, really cares about fish and wildlife in our borough. Really great bunch. So everybody's going to answer this question, and we are going to start this time down at the far end with Ted.
Okay.
What role do you see recreational fishing playing in the local economy? 90 seconds.
90 seconds. Boy, that's really hard because it plays a critical role. I believe that sports fishing has been a great economic importance to the Matsu tourism industry. For the industry, sport fishing has played a major role in attracting non-resident visitors, tourism outside of the Alaska, which helps all of Alaska. And then it's one of those that brings Alaskans to us. You look at how much they've spent on the average, over $100 million in direct money spent. You also look at how much they've brought and contributed in jobs, over 1,000 jobs, and over $60 million in family income. So it's critical to our economy. It's renewable, which means that it can be a cornerstone of our economy going into the future. But on the flip side, if we don't have these good have goals of getting the sustainable, consistent runs, it can have a terrible negative effect on our economy also.
Very good. Thank you. Man. I didn't have to interrupt you. So, Dan, do you want me to repeat the question at all, or are you good?
I don't think so.
Go for it.
I think we're all going to probably repeat some of what Ted said, but definitely fishing is very important to our economy. Fishing is a way of life in Alaska. And the word has gotten out to the lower 48, and so that attracts visitors to the state. And so that energizes our tourism industry, guides, hotels. It's just so central to marketing our state, the fishing industry. And the fact that our fish supply has declined so much, especially just this last year when they opened the commercial fishing into our conservation district. They opened up that conservation district to the commercial fishermen, and the commercial fishermen came in, took all these fish, and we hadn't even reached our escapements at that point in time. So the sports fishermen were really left with nothing. When the fish finally did come in, the tourism season was done, and our kids had gone back to school, and that deprived them of the enjoyment of being able to enjoy an Alaskan way of life. So certainly it's very central to our it's very central to our economy.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate that. Pat.
Okay.
Let me know if you need to repeat the question.
Basically, recreational fishing is just one component of our entire fishing industry. Unfortunately, the way things are right now, the recreational fishermen are like low man or fisherwomen on the totem pole. When you have your safety corridor and you have the lines of who's coming in and who's going out, you take all the massive fish out of that corridor that we should get when they're going down to Kenai. So we're putting the recreational fishermen as last in line. Our ecosystems of fish and people are so interrelated that if we don't have a good environment for the fish to live in, we can't live with it. Our fishermen feed our dogs, they feed our people, they bring in the tourism. We used to have a flourishing tourist business with them, even in Knik, with many, many livelihoods based upon the fishing industry. You know, I've been to Fish Creek. They've increased the culverts. We used to just walk down to Fish Creek and you were just walking on rocks. Now there's huge culverts so that those fish can move up when the tide comes in instead of grabbing them off the ground like some of the kids would do. So the recreational fishing industry is so important, but it's one component of the entire eco-economic system. We can't put them aside. We need to keep our tourists coming in. We need to keep our kids going and having fun.
Thank you very much. Sabrina.
Yes, I definitely agree with everything Pat just said, but you know, we're small business owners. We have a small Airbnb in downtown Palmer, and I don't think you think of downtown Palmer when you think of fishing, but it was amazing this summer just seeing, this was our first year doing it, just how many people were coming through just to have a place to stay while they go fishing. And so if one small one-room Airbnb is depending on that money, that income, you have to just think about the big picture and how much our community is depending on that money. Aside from that, I have two small kids. Teaching them to fish is one of the most important things that my husband and I have for them, and so making sure we're protecting that. I think one of you said that it's a renewable resource, but only if we protect it.
Thank you. Kenny?
Yeah, so like Sabrina said, downtown Palmer is probably not the height of fishing, but our residents are fishermen and women. I grew up recreational fishing all over the Matsu Borough, as well as down the peninsula. And so our constituents in Palmer specifically are stakeholders for what's going on further up the Matanuska River and what's going on right in our backyard and right in our community. So things like making sure that we are protecting our clean water and we are reaching those escapement goals. And so it creates this, like Pat was also saying, this larger ecosystem of who are those stakeholders, who do we work with. It's not just city and local government, it's also obviously the borough, it's also the state, it's also the federal government, and then it's also foreign governments, because we have relationships with Canada and with other, especially with salmon fishing, other fish that are leaving the oceans and coming into our rivers and streams. And so it's part of this micro or ecosystem as well as the macro level too. So thinking hyper-local, but also keeping that in mind. And I also have a young son and healthy outdoor lifestyles, especially for young kids.
Very good.
And a lot of fishing.
Thank you, everybody. I mean, 90 seconds seems like the right amount of time. I like this. No, you're very eloquent, and you get your stuff across, but you don't linger too much. That's good. Number two. And this question comes from Matsu College. Okay, as a local representative, you may, and oh, by the way, I should mention too, that folks, come on in and grab a seat. If you want to take the question and personalize it to your, either your potential borough role or city role, don't be afraid to, you know, do that. Okay, this question comes from Matsu College. As a local representative, you may not be able to control what happens to salmon out in the ocean, but what would you do to protect the salmon spawning and rearing habitat within the city of Palmer or the Matsu Borough? And we'll start with Kenny, actually.
Yeah, so this is actually a huge issue, especially for Palmer. We aren't seeing the major erosion issues for city residents, but we see them further up the Matanuska River, as well as out towards the Butte. I have family that live along Bodenberg Creek in the Butte, and if flooding and erosion takes place in the Matanuska, it affects their lives, it affects the fish that are running up Bodenberg Creek as well. And so when it comes to not being able to control the fish out in the ocean, but we can do things in our community to prioritize sustainable industry, for one. My father works within the construction trade and has done a lot of the dike building along the Matanuska and the Talkeetna Rivers, and working with officials and with water experts to be able to do it in a way that we're protecting our fish and making sure that we are doing it in a way that we're meeting those environmental protection standards as well. So, there are things that we can do to prioritize and to make sure that we are taking those concerns on board, as well as working with industry too, to make sure that we're protecting people's homes, but doing it in a way that we're not jeopardizing the lives of the important, fish is, when you think of Alaska, you think of fish, and so making sure that we're making them a priority.
Thank you. Sabrina.
Sure, I'll just add to what Kenny's saying there. In Palmer, the erosion issue is huge, and I think that there hasn't been enough emphasis on what repairs will do to the ecosystem. It's been a lot of saving homes, making sure that people aren't losing their property. But we can't rush into this with a quick solution of save the property. We have to think about the ecosystem and think about the fish. I grew up out in the Butte area, and it's amazing to see how everything has changed out there. Just fishing out at Jim Creek, fishing any of those small streams. We just have to be really careful when we prioritize what comes first in repairs and sustaining it for the future.
Thank you. Pat?
Well, there's multiple issues that face us. I think the Wildlife and Fish Commission that the boroughs put together has worked really hard, and they've done a lot of research, and their decisions are based upon research. It's evidence-based. It's not politically based. And I really, as a nurse and as a public health master's, I feel that that's very important. I may have my feelings, but I want to know what the numbers are. You know, don't confuse me with the facts, as some people may say. But after reviewing what the commission's done, I think it's fantastic. I think there's four issues that really address, four things we need to address in this issue. And the first one is pollution. We need to be able to keep our streams and waterways clean. We need to make sure that our vegetation that grows along the waterways supports and prevents erosion. We need to make sure that it's not an invasive species that's going to just cloud up the water and kill off the plants and kill off the fish and the smolt and the eggs. The second thing is a fish passage, which I mentioned before, the beautiful culverts that you can run through instead of trip over. The invasive species we need to control, the borough's addressing these issues right now. Then we also have to remember that there's that animal called a pike. I think some of us refer to it as snakes. I've gone fishing for pike before I even came to Alaska. And those things are snakes. Catch it, kill it.
Thank you, Pat. Dan, and if anybody needs me to repeat the question, let me know.
I think I've got it.
We're talking about what can you do within the borough to protect salmon spawning and rearing habitat.
I think we really need to continue to support our fish passage culverts. The borough government has been one of the most aggressive governments statewide in our fish passage program. And I think we need to continue to support that. I believe there were like 107 fish passage culverts as of 2016. There's about 107 that were installed. I was just at the transportation fair, and I put a map there, and there's plenty of little red dots where they still need to make improvements, and so we really need to continue to support that program. Obviously, invasive species and pike need to be addressed also. I think we really do need to be more aggressive on our pike. It seems like some of the commercial fishermen use our pike as an excuse for not letting us have fish in the northern fisheries. So that is something I would hope that we can do a free-for-all on pike.
Thank you. Thank you, Dan. Ted, go ahead.
I think everyone has hit all key components of what we're talking about. I think we at the borough can manage this habitat and ensure protection of it through good planning, investment in infrastructure, and a balanced regulatory system. And that also includes ensuring that we do invest to get the right scientific information for our decision makers to make decisions. I agree with Pat that we have to give a lot of credit to our Fish and Wildlife Commission. Through science, they're the ones who fought so hard to get the conservation corridor. So what we need to do is we need to be able to ensure that the roads that we're building, the bridges that we're building, have standards that allow salmon passage, that work for runoff, minimizing runoff, also utilize good stormwater systems, work on expanding our water and sewer systems to ensure quality of our water systems. And and I agree with Dan, we really need to continue to invest in our fish passage program.
Thank you, Ted. So it's really great. Several people mentioned something about, you know, kind of protecting water, and this next question kind of feeds into that as well, it looks like. And I didn't see these questions much, so, but I'm gonna switch it up a little bit, so beware of who I'm asking first. We're gonna start with Dan, work this way, and then get around to Ted, and
something I know something about.
It's not gonna, just gonna be from one end to the other. Okay, so anyway, this question comes from a Wasilla resident. What is your perspective on using riparian setbacks, naturally vegetated areas for a specified distance on stream banks, as a tool for protecting salmon habitat? We'll start with Dan, move towards me, and then catch Ted.
That is, it is kind of a difficult question. We did have the riparian buffer ordinance come to us, I want to say 8 months ago or more. I wasn't in particular, I didn't favor that particular piece of legislation because I felt like it took personal property away from folks and didn't allow them to use it. As a general rule, I do think that we should support riparian buffers, but I think that that needs to be a voluntary step. I live on Big Lake, and I have 120 feet of shoreline thereabouts. And certainly, I would like to see that turned into fish-friendly bank rather than the erosion setbacks that it is right now. So I would certainly favor it on a personal scale to have that turned in there and be done.
Thank you, Pat.
Well, coming from a public health background, which isn't just nursing, one of the philosophies is think globally but work locally. So locally, what is the best interest of everyone within our environment? Private property is very important. However, sometimes we have to honor our ecosystems and honor the greater good. Therefore, I feel that vegetation can be beautiful and also sustainable. It can make your yard look beautiful. I know that in the past, there are setbacks specifically for septic systems on the lakes. And it used to be 50 feet, I think. I don't know what it is anymore because I don't live on a lake. But those are reasonable decisions that are made to protect the environment. And that means protecting the health of everyone, fish, fauna, animal, and humanoid. So it's a difficult issue because everyone gets upset about thinking emotionally. But you have to remember, science is true. So please don't confuse me with the facts again. If it works, you have someone that has done the research. It's been made possible in many other countries. So we need to work as a unit, as a group of people that are willing to have the common good and sustain each person's private enterprise. Thank you.
Thank you. Sabrina.
I also think you get into a sticky situation when you ask private property owners to force them to do something on their own property. But I think a good place to start is with new developments and getting ordinances in place so that any new developments that are created already have those laws in effect to make sure that they're using those type of barriers. But I'm a proponent of anything that's better for the environment rather than just how it looks. Or there's a lot of beautiful ways to make those barriers on your property, and I don't really see a good reason to fight against it other than just out of spite of saying you can't tell me what to do on my land. But I think we could all work together and create ordinances that would make everyone happy.
Thank you. Kenny.
Yeah, so I think part of why this has become an issue is that we're not communicating as well as we probably could be, is making sure that those communication channels are open with residents, and by using the facts and by using science to be able to explain why this benefits not only private homeowners, but as well as their neighbors further down a stream or down a waterway, as well as their neighbors further up, I think is really important, because we're a small community. We're a big, small community, not just the city of Palmer, but the borough as well, that I think people, private citizens, really care about the environment, especially when it's their environment and their homes, and being able to explain and better communicate how what happens within their yard is going to affect the rest of our community, I think is a really important way to approach these setbacks of these sort of barriers. As well as talking about on a borough level, maybe, that, or even on the city level, if that does come up for Palmer, incentives to really be able to work with private homeowners to make it not a negative thing, but something that is going to either elevate their property level or the assessment and things with value, making sure that we're working with people. So,
thank you, Kenny.
Yeah, thank you,
Ted.
Okay, I think we all agree that protecting salmon habitat is very important. But I think as we go through this process, I am with Dan that it does make me nervous when we have to, if we dictate how people utilize their property. But again, I think there can be a balance of protecting the habitat while respecting the property rights and the development of people's properties. So I think it goes back again to what people have said, is that we need to go through the science, provide the information to everyone, and then through a good, strong public process, we make the decisions on how we're going to move forward, which includes feedback from the property owners and all people involved.
Thank you very much. Great answers, folks. Heads up, I'm gonna change it up a little bit. We're gonna start with Sabrina, move that way, and then catch Kenny. So Sabrina, so this question comes from a local fish biologist. Over the summer, there seemed to be a lot of animosity and antagonism between commercial fishermen in Cook Inlet and sport fishermen in the valley. What do you see your role as an elected official being in balancing these dynamics between sport and commercial fishing interests, especially when local salmon populations entering the Mat-Su streams could be impacted? A lot there.
Yes. You know, I'm not sure how much impact the city of Palmer would be able to have on that, but I'm one of those sports fishermen that gets super mad when there's a commercial opening and then they don't have any fish. And it often seems like there just isn't enough communication. You get people that come into town to do their sports fishing, and then there's a commercial opener and they can't go fishing, or there's nothing to catch. So I feel like there just needs to be a lot more communication in that realm. I would be interested in hearing a lot more public testimony on it, and being able to give our recommendation as a city council on how it affects us locally on our economy, and be able to have a voice in those discussions.
Very good. Pat?
Well, I think one of the things we need to do is to trust our borough commission that's done the research on what's going on and where it's happening. I don't have a degree in fish biology. I don't swim very well, to be honest. So, I think that it's so important that we balance the needs and we balance the knowledge. If I was a commercial fisherman, I would say, give me all my fish so I can feed my family. But if it's a recreational fisher person, I'm going, I'm entitled to fish too. I need my fish. Well, we've committed we've got a commission that's committed to helping address specifically issues of the utilization for everyone of the fishing industry. And once again, it's based on evidence research. I know I sound like a record, but we have to find a knowledge base that we can trust. I can't answer these questions. I, you know, maybe if I was a fish, I'd even have a different answer and tell you to leave me alone. But it's so important that we get the knowledge, we trust the people that we find, and that we work together as a community. We actually get the information out so that when people hear something, they can say, oh, this is for real, or oh, that's somebody just telling me what to do, or someone just wants their fish tank full and not mine. So it's not an easy question. It's never going to be answered completely. But we as a group and a community, we can address the issue and make some good decisions.
Thank you. Dan.
Thank you. You know, for as long as I can remember, the Fish and Wildlife Commission has been the authority on fish. And I don't think any elected official, certainly one that doesn't serve on the commission, could know as much as these folks know. They've got the years of experience and just the background on the entire science of fish. So I think as an elected official, our job is to support what they have proven is successful scientifically. And we need to support them both at the Board of Fishery and when we have discussions with our legislators and when we have discussions with the executive branch. And you know, obviously, Assemblymember Sykes and Assemblymember Kowalki and Colgan have done that in the past, and Mayor Halter has sent a couple of letters to the executive branch explaining that we need to have this fish conservation corridor protected. And I mean, ultimately what I'd like to see, and this may be a little naive, but I'm thinking, you know, that really we need to have our escapements met here before we allow the commercial fishing industry to come in and capture those fish that are bound here.
Ooh, it's a really big thing right at the very end. I got to cut you off right there. That's a big deal. Okay, Ted.
Okay. Well, you know, I think, again, as everyone has said, we need to give credit and trust our commission. And thank you, Assemblymember Sykes, for being on that commission. They have, through the last couple months, worked on issues that we have. And the issues are showing that they believe, and again, as Dan said, I believe in what they're telling us, is that we aren't getting adequate escapement from fishing game. And they are not managing the corridor in a way that guarantees that we're going to get sustainable runs. I think we need to continue to provide the resources to the commission so they can work with fish and game and ensure that we have the scientific information to give to the Department of Fish and Game. We need the sonar. We need the wares, and we need to make sure that Fish and Game has the information, and that we also have that information to ensure that we are getting our fair share of the escapement as it's going past the commercial fisheries.
Very good, thank you. Kenny.
So I have family and friends that fit into both of those camps of commercial fishermen, as well as sports fishermen, as well as subsistence fishermen. And we have those residents in Palmer that we have members, residents of Palmer that are members of Chickaloon Native Village as well. And so when it comes to, I feel like it's not an either or system. It's not a binary system. It's not, there will either be enough fish for commercial fishing and or there will be enough for sport fishing. That it's really part of this ongoing communication between all levels of government. So from our hyper-local City of Palmer and City Palmer Council, being able to have those conversations with the state and making sure that we are benefiting all of our residents from all sides of it. So I think it's important to make sure that we're thinking long term, because I think what happens on a yearly basis is, especially with escapement goals and with, we constantly have a moving goalpost as well of what's going to happen this year. Is this year going to be a great run? We don't know. And so making sure we are planning into the future and protecting the environments that we have, so hopefully we will have higher returns 5 years down the line and not just thinking from year to year.
Thank you. Okay, let's see. I'm gonna start this time with Pat and go away from me. Get the assembly folks first. Okay, this question comes from an Anchorage resident who owns property in Big Lake. With the rapid population growth in the valley, how do you believe the area can grow sustainably and balance needed infrastructure improvements, roads, bridges, energy, with salmon habitat considerations in mind? Would you support specific city or borough tax allocations for salmon resources? A couple of questions there. You want me to repeat it?
I'll try and address several issues. First word comes out of your mouth, tax. Nobody wants taxes. We have been addressing that issue for how many years? How do I feel about the resource development and protection in the areas such as Big Lake? We need to provide it. Our commission offers the direction. We are at risk if we don't initiate any of these resolutions to provide it. Do we offer a tax? It would require many, many days of research and many, many positive ways to say, yes, this tax is going to help you. So every time I hear the word tax, I hear the word no, no way. So unfortunately, our property owners pay all of the taxes for the most part in the borough. And the person that's living in Anchorage that owns land, he's paying more taxes than I am, because I at least get to live here and enjoy the benefits of his taxes. So, you know, I really can't tell you how you can answer that question. You know, it's not a win-win situation. Sorry.
Thank you. Dan, it's a long question. If you want me to repeat it, I can do that.
It's a long question, but I have a short answer. I think the way that as we develop infrastructure, we need to, again, make sure that we have proper fish passage culverts. I think that's really the answer there. Identify our fish streams and lakes and make sure that our fish can travel freely. I think that's the best way you protect fish in that particular example when you're developing roadways, bridges, etc. As far as taxes, no, I wouldn't support a separate tax at this point.
Thank you. Ted.
Mark, could I get that question?
Yes.
And I understand the last part of that.
So we know it's a person from Anchorage. We know there's rapid population growth. How do you believe the area can grow sustainably and balance needed infrastructure improvements with salmon habitat considerations in mind? And then would you support specific city or borough tax allocations for salmon resources?
Boy, I think I pretty much answered that question when we were talking about the setback. I think that the way we protect our habitat and how we go forward is through good planning, infrastructure, funding infrastructure, and protecting the habitat through good balanced regulatory systems. With that, I agree with Dan that we need to look at how we build our needed infrastructure, taking into account salmon, as with the fish passages, with looking at runoff, our new stormwater systems as you develop new neighborhoods, and then you also have to look at again, still investing and maintaining the programs that we have that help fish passage and habitat right now. So on the tax, I think we need to allocate resources that we have, and it's through long-range financial planning, but not a new separate tax.
Very good, thank you. Kim?
So let's get creative. I think when we hear taxes, it becomes this big idea of a granite block that's about to land on everybody's head. But I think there's ways of setting aside money or reprioritizing the money that we have to make sure that we are making sure that we're developing sustainably. So thinking about maybe, I'm just throwing this out there, but maybe as, and we, within the city of Palmer, this is our frame of reference, but when somebody sells their home, that maybe we could set aside part of a fee as part of the title transfer process that goes towards sustainable development and making sure that we are protecting our waterways, that it's not a tax, but it's a way of leveraging money to be able to set aside, to be able to use into the future, as well as working with the money that we have. And sometimes that means looking at specific grants that we could do within the city and different partners that we can work with, so different stakeholders, different organizations like this one right here that have good ideas, to be able to bring those ideas into the development process and to elevate the voices of the people that have those great ideas and to bring them to the table. Because I don't have all of the ideas or all of the answers, but I know people that have some great ones.
Thank you.
She has most of the answers.
Sabrina.
There's been so much growth, especially north of Wasilla, KGB, Meadow Lakes and Big Lake. And so I don't think there was a lot of thought and regulation put into the big property boom that has happened in the last 15 years. And you're seeing it now. They're playing catch up, adding culverts, adding new road developments to help with the ecosystem. And so I'm hopeful that since they're working kind of on the backlog, that any new development, they're keeping those things in mind. I wouldn't support a tax for it. Kenny's right, finding creative ways with existing money would always be helpful. But once you start adding new taxes for every new project, especially with special interest in mind, it gets pretty murky.
Thank you, Sabrina. So for this round, the next question is the last question for this round, and we're going to start with Kenny and move down. So this will be our closing question. What do salmon mean to you? And, you know, we know there's overlap in some of this, but what do salmon mean to you, and what is your connection to salmon in your district or area?
Ooh, good question. So I have a little one. He turns one the day after the election next week. So he turns one next Wednesday. And his very favorite food is salmon, and I'm so proud of that. I brought, my husband's originally from Ireland, and I brought him back to Palmer because of the access to the outdoors and to an active lifestyle, as well as to salmon, to the fish that I grew up eating, the fish that I want my family to grow up eating. And we had, my father-in-law was here in July and was just flabbergasted at the freezer full of various chunks of salmon, fillets and smoked salmon. And it seeing his awe reminds me of how incredibly lucky we are and how grateful I am to live in this community, that this is something that I can celebrate and I take for granted a lot of the time. And it's great, especially in a forum like this, to remind myself that this is it's a renewable resource, but we have to take care of it and we have to be good stewards of our waterways to make sure that salmon lasts for generations, that this is, it's a sacred fish for a lot of our community members, and making sure that we honor that, and as well as all the different ways that we use and benefit from salmon.
Thank you. Sabrina?
I never thought I would formulate a question of gushing about salmon, but I am. One of my first big jobs when I was 16 was working out of Bristol Bay on a commercial fishing boat. So I was lucky to see that side of the industry. But Kenny's right, you know, we house Matsu Miners in the summer, so we always have two baseball players that usually come from the East Coast. And the last 3 years, I've had boys that have never had anything but farm salmon, and I've never tasted farm salmon in my life. And so I get these gorgeous fillets out of the freezer that are honestly a year old, and they're like, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life. And I'm like, we're 2 seconds from giving it to Pat for her dog. But,
it's not legal.
Just getting it from, from the largest aspect of commercial fishing down to taking my kids down to a fleet control race where I grew up fishing, it affects every single one of us in Alaska in some way, shape, or form. Even if you don't like salmon, if you don't eat it, if you don't care about it, it's still affecting you because it affects our economy and it affects our tourism. And so it's something we all have to care about.
Thank you. Pat?
Well, I have to tell you something. I'm a salmon convert. I came from the Midwest. Do you know what I grew up on? Salmon croquettes out of the can. Pink. I hate salmon. I would never let it near me. Well, then I came to Alaska 30 years ago, and I was in Kinnick. Well, you got fish multiple ways. And I never tasted a fresh salmon in my life till I got here. I have to tell you, that's my favorite way. The frozen is okay, but when you just yank it out and just a fillet it, and you don't even look for bones, it's like, oh, this is heaven. I can tell you what hell would be eating a pike. So how do I feel about salmon? I think it's one of the most sustainable ecosystems of the world. It's one of the things that our population in our local area, specifically Wasilla, it depends on for the tourism. We need to keep our salmon healthy. Our people need it to eat. We need it to sell to our families out in, how many fish do you send away to your family on Christmas time? So it's a multi-system. And without the salmon, we would be harmed very much in Wasilla, I know, because so many people depend upon their jobs, the utilization of being healthy. You know, salmon doesn't have any lead in it right now. Halibut does. So, you know, it's important to maintain a wonderful, sustainable environment.
Thank you. Dan, what's your connection to salmon in your area?
Well, I understood the first part of the question of what does salmon mean to you?
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
So, you know, salmon to me means fun. It means recreation. It means, dinner on the table. It means great barbecues. It means having friends over. It means spending time with my grandkids fishing. So, you know, those are the things that salmon means to me. As an elected official, salmon means a robust economy and a great fishing industry. So, how am I connected to salmon? You know, I started fishing when I first got up here in 1962. My dad took me out and we did fishing down the Ship Creek. And we've been fishing salmon ever since. And so, I'm connected as an Alaskan and as a person who loves the outdoors, and I think it's a very important part of being an Alaskan is to be able to enjoy our renewable fishing industry.
Thank you. Ted?
Yes, Mark. First and foremost to me, it means food for families. I've lived in Dillingham, I've lived in Bethel, and I've lived in several other areas of the state, and I can remember seeing that food, or the salmon, drying, and that if there wasn't a good salmon harvest, people were going to go hungry during the winter. So I think that is the same for certain families in the Matsu, so these runs are very important. I think quality of life, as everyone said, you know, that we all love to recreate in the valley, and fishing is a key component of that. It is a statewide economic engine for this state. So as salmon goes, so does our state. So we're all connected through that economy. It's critical, again, to the Mat-Su economy that we need consistent, long-term, sustainable runs for our tourism industry, for, oh, did I see? For,
I just have to,
for our economy, and then jobs, you know, the industry here, sport fishing, other industry, the cottage industries, provide jobs for our citizens, which is critical in this unemployment environment that we're in. Then I also look at renewable. Again, that if we can create long-term sustainable runs, we have a cornerstone for our economy that will go far into the future.
Very good. Thank you all for those questions. And now we're
going to
do...
I've seen cans of Alaska salmon in a shop in Bangalore, India.
Bangalore? All right.
Far reaching.
Okay, so we've got... if you've got a question that you've written on a card, you can drop it in the basket, and we are going to pull from the basket. So this is your chance to add to the discussion.
Anybody has questions or items they'd like to share?
One gal's writing, but we might be able to get them all.
Yeah. Can I ask a process question? Do we have to write our question on the card, or if there's only two card questions, can we just have a question? Would you just let us ask it, or are you trying to keep control of...
control?
I don't know. I'm still formulating my question, so I'm hesitant to put it on the card.
Why don't you keep formulating for a while, and we'll get to some other questions and see how the time goes. And,
Kim wants to ask about the Great Land Trust, the 295-acre land.
Okay, let's start with this one. And we're going to start with Ted and move towards me. If you are, and by the way, I'm going to have to read these, so. Okay. If you're elected, and 50 years from now, a Mat-Su resident described your salmon legacy, what would they say? Your particular salmon legacy.
I hope I'm here still 50 years to answer
something.
But I think my legacy would be that I made a contribution to working with the commission to create long-term sustainable runs. I think working with the commission, providing the science, giving them the funding to do their job, that in 50 years we have consistent runs, would be a legacy I'd be proud of.
Very good, thank you. Dan?
I would hope that someone would be able to say that Dan was able to support our Fish and Wildlife Commission in increasing our expected salmon escapement and still meeting the goals of having that escapement be met. The Fishery Board, or I should say Fish and Game, reduced our escapements in the valley here just this last year so that we could meet our escapement goals. That's kind of like, passing a failing student. But, and we met most of those goals. But I think the real answer to a sustainable fishery is to have high escapement goals and be able to meet those and be able to provide a good, solid sports fishing industry here in the northern fishery.
Thank you. Pat, your legacy in 50 years.
In 50 years, my great-granddaughter Maura is going to go down and fish at Fish Creek. My great-grandson's going to be out on a kayak trying to keep from killing himself. In 50 years, there's going to be as much fish as anyone can need because we have learned to grow an industry and we have saved the salmon and we, well, let's put it this way. My great-grandkids are going to go down the hill, pick up Ramey's great-grandkids, Reddington, and they're all going to go out in Fish Creek, and if there aren't any fish, they'll swim. When the fish come in, they won't snag. They might pick one up, but there will be enough fish that my great-grandkids will never even worry about what I thought about. They'll just know it's good.
Thank you. Sabrina.
Mine is similar, that my children will be taking their grandchildren down Rabbit Slough in a canoe that still doesn't allow motorized boats and getting their fill of silver salmon. I'm also a huge proponent of renewable energy, so also that I helped get us to the 50% renewable energy goal by 2025 without harming any salmon. So
without harming. Kenya.
I hope that, same when it comes to looking out towards the future with the son that I have, that he is out fishing, and I hope that my legacy is that I use an interdisciplinary lens to bring a collective group of brilliant people together and foster a community buy-in to really make sure that we're honoring the role of salmon not only in our economy, but also in our culture, our livelihoods, and salmon for the sake of salmon. I think we forget about that as well, that we talk about salmon as a use for our needs, but salmon is important for the rest of the ecology of our area, that salmon has benefits that have no human impact, and making sure that we remember that and that we honor that. And I hope that my grandchildren or great-grandchildren are taking me out in a kayak and taking me. Probably, hopefully not pushing me.
That's what I was thinking.
That's not a chance.
I know, it's like my 30th birthday was Saturday, so I will be 80.
You got the chance. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, on this next one, heads up, Megan. I'm gonna limit you folks to 30 seconds.
Oh, wow.
because you'll see why. And we're gonna start with Pat and move towards Ted and then come around. What is one thing you commit to doing for salmon if elected? 30 seconds.
I'll eat more. I'll only eat fresh salmon. I'll never allow a farm-fed salmon in any of my family's homes. Okay? I will support the use and the development of salmon in any shape or form that I can. Salmon is king. It's not queen, but it could be.
Thank you, Pat. Dan, 30 seconds. What would you commit?
Some people have suggested that I may want to join as the other assembly member on the Fish and Wildlife Commission, and I'm certainly open to that, although there may be another assembly member who may be more apt, more talented in doing that. But the one thing I will commit to is I plan on attending, along with the Fish and Wildlife Commission, the Board of Fish, the next Board of Fisheries, that will talk about our future of northern fisheries.
Very good, thank you. Ted, 30 seconds, what are you going to commit to?
Commit to. I will commit to continue to support the Commission and ensure that they get the funding needed to have the science and the tools to work with Fish and Game to make sure we get our escape routes.
Very good. Kenny, what do you commit to at Palmer City Council?
I will commit to celebrating Salmon Day. So we have a designated Salmon Day for the state of Alaska, and I will commit to making that a family-friendly event and celebrating it right in Palmer. We have the Train Depot. It's a great community space, and making sure that we bring all stakeholders in the community together to celebrate salmon and hopefully eat lots of it.
Thank you, Kenny. Sabrina?
I will commit to learning what our connection to the Board of Fisheries is as a city council. I'm not sure, honestly, the extent of it, and if it doesn't exist, I'd like to help create it.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, next question. Let's see. I think what we'll do, we're going to stick with Sabrina, come towards me, and then work to the assembly. Well, okay. Okay, anyway, you'll see why I'm hesitating. How can the Matsu Borough work with legislators, state and federal officials to keep restoring our salmon runs? And let's just change that to how can you and the city council as well?
I think just making sure that there's plenty of room for public input and public testimony. Working with our legislators is becoming a scary sentence. And so making sure that we're not just focusing on one pigeonhole thing of budget, of oil, and just making sure that we're still making sure our voices are heard when it comes to protecting salmon and protecting our ecosystem.
Very good, thank you.
Similar lines, I think developing that relationship with the Board of Fisheries as well as using resources from the City Council side of it. We have the Alaska Municipal League, and being able to leverage the network of communities across the state to be able to have those conversations on a broader level and be able to elevate our voice as Palmer residents, as well as, like Sabrina said, working with our Valley delegation. And fostering those relationships and making sure that our voices are heard from City Council, our boards and commissions, City Council, all the way up through the borough and into the state level. So communication.
Very good, thank you. Ted, I should have made it clear we're at 90 seconds.
Oh, we're at 90 seconds, okay. Well, I'm sure I won't need that much time. Again, I think in communicating with our state legislature, the board, and the administration, that I will be supporting our commission, and hopefully they will be providing me information. I believe that with my 8 years of working with the state and with state corporations, and testifying probably way too many weeks every year in Juneau, that I can assist the borough manager and the mayor in navigating those waters and working with the borough assembly in communicating with the legislators and with the administration.
Thank you. Dan?
I think our most valuable relationship is with the executive branch, but we need to be supported by our legislators, of course. The executive branch appoints the Board of Fisheries and ADFG commissioners, etc. And so we need to have a strong relationship with them to really put forward the agenda that we have on our northern fisheries to make sure that there's more balance given between the commercial industry and the sports fishing industry. Right now, we have a lopsided emphasis on commercial, and that's to our detriment entirely, and that needs to change.
Thank you. Pat?
Well, I have to agree with Dan. We need to be able to communicate with our local legislators and our governor. He does appoint to the board, but we're also going to enter into the federal venue. There are attempts to take more control over the Cook Inlet by the feds. How do we deal with them? Well, we're going to have to get a hold of our local, state, and federal legislators. They are going to have to intervene. But I think the best way to do this is to educate our populace. How do we know? What do we know about salmon? What do you know? How do you benefit by salmon? Then you bombard everyone with emails and love letters and say, you're messing with our lives. We need you to help fix it. But it has to be education. And we have to work with, like I said, the governor. We have to work with the locals. But it's important to educate our population to the benefits of it. It's not just good for me. It's good for you. It's good for the country. When our salmon are well, we're doing well.
Thank you very much. Got one more here. going to start with 10 and come towards me. It's a little long, so can we get rid of the rule that a salmon has to be caught by a hook in its mouth? Is it true that a large percentage of snag salmon soon after release will not spawn? I'm just reading.
Is it true that
they don't spawn after they've been snagged?
After they've been hooked.
And to tell you the truth on that, I'm not sure if you can get rid of the rule. I would want to know why the rule was there in the first place, and I do not have that technical knowledge. And I definitely don't have the biological knowledge to know whether or not if a fish has been snagged, it can't spawn. So I'm hoping someone else on the panel may know that.
Well, we're going to go down the line, Dan. And if you need me to read them both again?
Would you read that one?
Okay, can we get rid of the rule that a salmon has to be caught by a hook in its mouth? And is it true that a large percentage of snagged salmon die soon after release and will not spawn?
Okay, so I don't have any scientific background on any of this, but you know, it's sports fishing. So hook them in the mouth. That's fair. It's sports fishing. So I would... Just off the cuff, I'd say, let's not get rid of that rule. I am a sportsman. I have no scientific knowledge whatsoever to substantiate a position on whether or not a salmon can spawn after it's snagged.
Thank you.
Pat?
Well, I have to agree. If you're fishing, you're fishing. You're not snagging, you're not dip netting, you're not fishing with the fish. If you're gonna be a fisherman, hook it in the mouth. Can it spawn afterwards if it's snagged? I don't know, but every pike that I caught and released, those things reproduced anyway. So I seriously doubt that spawns, that snagging a fish, unless you snag it in a delicate area, can keep it from reproducing. But I don't have the answer.
Thank you. Sabrina?
I also do not have the scientific knowledge to know the answer. I know my husband would say, get them however you can.
Yeah.
But I'm a competitive person, and catching them in the mouth is the right way to do it.
Kim?
I think this highlights an issue, that the fact that none of us actually have that biological knowledge. I think if this is an issue, then we need to be elevating it, and more people should know about it if this is an issue. If it's not a non-issue, then we can go that route as well. My question is, how would we want to go about catching them without a hook and a line? I've tried catching salmon by hand. That's really hard. But we also, realizing that there's a lot of different ways to catch salmon, that we do it through fish wheels, we do it through dip netting, we do it through line and hook as well. So realizing there's a lot of different ways that salmon come into our lives, but I am not a fish biologist.
Thank you very much. I have to say thanks for all the very great, insightful answers to all the questions. I'm very impressed that, you know, obviously salmon's a big deal. I want to see, since I'm just the moderator, I'm going to ask Amy anything else.
Just want to give you guys all a quick minute for some closing comments, and again, thank you so much. This was a really enjoyable conversation. It's just, again, so cool to have so many people here that all care about the same thing. I love the responses of what everybody connects to salmon. That was really a highlight. It was a lot of fun getting to know, I mean, really how you care about salmon and why, how that relates to your decision to run for office this time around. And to everybody here, thank you so much. Please tell family, friends, you know, anybody that can vote that our local elections are this Tuesday. Local elections are super important. We want to get the voter turnout as high as we can. So please go to the polls. Encourage everybody else you know to go to the polls. Double check if they're actually open in their district. It's not a borough-wide election this time around, so do check that. And again, thanks to everybody. So if you guys...
And before we get to your final comments, I also want to mention that if somebody couldn't make it tonight, Radio Free Palmer is going to have this, I'm assuming, on their website, so we appreciate them recording it. And you can direct people to that if you're in your assembly district or your city council district. And last comments. We'll start with Kenny.
First of all, I just want to thank you all for the opportunity to be here. A lot of times you don't think of Palmer City Council and you think of Salmon. And I think through the conversations that we've had, we've realized that everybody benefits from having these conversations and bringing all members of the community and stakeholders to the table, I think is really important. And like we've heard, Election Day is Tuesday. Specifically for Palmer City Council, there are four candidates, there are two open seats, and you can vote for two people. Top two vote-getters get the two seats. So I've really enjoyed being here and hearing everybody else's love of Salmon and seeing people that support our community in a way that is really important to myself and to my family.
Thank you. Yeah. Sabrina.
Thank you so much for having us here. Kenny and I got really excited when we got this invite. We're like, those are our people. So it's been really nice having this conversation and in a relaxed environment, just seeing who comes out to talk about it and who cares about these things that we care about. So Palmer City Council doesn't have a huge say probably in the fishing industry, but it's important to be a part of the discussion.
Thank you, Pat.
I appreciate being invited to speak. I think the most important thing I can do is support the Wildlife and Fish Commission because they've spent so much time and make sure they have the money available. And they also have the means to communicate and make the governor put us at the table when there's discussions. And if we have to get involved with the feds, make sure that we, the Matt Sioux, are there at the table, not being told who we are. We can tell anyone who we are. So that to me is the most important thing. We need to support our commission, support our need to be recognized.
Thank you. Dan.
Thanks. Thank you all for being here. Appreciate it very much. You know, one of the things that energized me about attending this meeting this evening was the fact that I attended the Fish and Wildlife meeting with Department of Fish and Game commissioners that came to see us. And it was painfully evident going through that meeting that even the sports fishing commissioner was lopsided and supported the commercial fishing industry. And it was, I mean, it was just so obvious. And so, you know, at that point in time, I kind of thought, well, you know, we really need to swing the pendulum here, and it's going to take all of us to do that. And certainly, you know, as an elected official, I think we can have some impact, but we need to motivate the public also and make sure that they're behind us and that they're speaking loudly to Fish and Game, to the Board of Fishery. I hope that everybody in the Valley, as far as I'm concerned, attends the Board of Fishery meeting to change their mind. But you know, we need to have more emphasis placed on our sports fishing industry here. We need to make escapement goals that are reasonable escapement goals, not the diluted escapement goals.
Let's stop you there.
Okay.
Thank you very much. And Ted.
Again, like everyone has said, thank you very much for allowing us to be here. As we've talked about tonight, sustainable goals are a key component of our economy. And salmon is a significant factor also in our quality of life.
Exactly. So, yes, I agree.
Okay, thank you. And so I think as an elected official, again, I agree that we need to support our commission, ensure that our commission has the tools to provide the science to Fishing Game and to the board so that they understand where the escapement levels need to be for us to have sustainable runs. And again, I think it all comes down to communication and science. And with those two things, we can make more headway like we have with setting up the conservation corridor, and we can move forward. So in that 50 years that we aren't talking about escapement anymore, and that there are staff for everyone.
Let's thank all the candidates.